So a core element of motivating people is knowing what they need. And knowing what they need essentially comes from being able to empathize with them and to understand them and to be able to figure out what makes this guy tick, what actually motivates him, what worries him, what things in the game make him uncomfortable, where can I put him that arouses his confidence again because he'll get rolling and then I can do extra things with him. You've got to understand all these things in order to be able to bring the best out of these guys. And because when you bring the best out of them, here's the thing. People often think that confidence is about just telling someone, yeah, do better, and then they just perform better in the game. Well, how about if you could move them around in the game or help them out in the game, get their results going in the game, then they will naturally become more confident because they'll feel the game flowing, they'll feel like they're having an impact, they'll feel like they can do their job. It sounds like you've gone the other way around, but I think that's the thing. That's a way to directly solve that rather than just trying to psychologically bend this person to your will to suddenly believe that they're a great player. The problem here is Tappy has shown himself to be woeful in this respect. I mean, he's had star players where he didn't really understand what they wanted. Now, maybe some of them told him, oh, I'm fine, we're doing this and that. That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what they say. It matters what the results in the game are. You've got to be able to read what those are and then figure out what's best for that guy. So you look at some of the players he's had, star players, and a bunch of them have been out of sorts and haven't played that well. Shocks, Kenny S, different periods of time. Then you go and you look at the players who've really struggled in his teams. So Kiyoshima literally had to be kicked. He could not be brought out of that hole where he just had given up completely, didn't know his role in the team. Even worse, the team was doing well and he was having no impact and therefore he just was idling, just doing nothing, and they were just kind of allowing it. Then you have NBK. This is someone where he's had a couple of slumps now where he's become a really poor player, and yet he's been put in such essential roles within the team. This is a guy who has to have confidence in your team. This is a guy where you have to make him realize how important he is and how key he is and how he doesn't have to do everything. Well, the things he is doing is what allows the other ones to succeed. This is someone who was the right-hand man of Happy, and he's let this guy just completely fade away and just become exasperated and frustrated to the extent that MBK, because he's the kingmaker in the French scene, has become exasperated with Happy. And you've seen that the result in terms of interview comments and the way that they've reacted with each other, the fact that MBK took over as in-game leader again for a while. There's also the fact that to be a leader means you have to be good at problem solving. Well, what Happy has shown us is that when he doesn't get his way, whether that means results in the game or individually within his team, people don't want to play his way, or eventually they're insubordinate because it's not working, he sulks. He doesn't take it well at all. He can't take it on the chin. He can't accept that he was wrong or that things have gone badly. So in terms of sulking, in terms of the game, that means he just does whatever he wants to in the game still, even though it's not working, and just runs the team into the ground. In terms of inter-team dynamics, that means he just withdraws himself from the team. That means he doesn't put in extra work to figure out this guy, what he needs to motivate him, or what he needs to tweak here to make this guy happy. He just expects them to just themselves know what to do and fix themselves. This is someone where when the team themselves have gone against what he wanted, he has just continued to play his style, which only works when the whole team is on the same page with him and he is the in-game leader triggering all the action. And as a result, has essentially sabotaged some team efforts and given them almost no chance to win. And for what? To prove a point to them, to prove some petty political point to them about the fact that he should be the leader and everyone should listen to him.
So I warned everyone in Flashpoint from the second I was there, same as I did with CSPPA, like, you cannot trust this person or these people. He could well be playing you, and make sure that whatever he has told you is locked in contract and cannot be reneged on. He cannot go back. But the problem is, they're owners, he's an owner. On some level, they'll always trust each other more than they trust outsiders because they know they have to deal with each other for years, do buy-ups with each other, they have to be in bed with each other. So they never truly want to be totally against each other or believe the other guy is the biggest liar of all time. So as a result, they all naively thought, well, it's in his self-interest to come and do this and to battle the ESL and to be the number one team but not go with the ESL. They'll have to be revolutionary and get more from the start. They really thought this was the case. So unfortunately, they even were under some sort of insane impression that he just didn't like ESL and as a result would come with us. And, you know, he was part of the revolutionary group, as it was. He's such a piece of shit. He basically implied that literally to me. I know he lies now and pretends he never had anything to do with me. He basically told me straight up, like, I agree with your premises. Like, that's what I'm on board with. And then magically went against exactly what he claimed he did, because that's who Nicola Lie, that's who Nickin and Lie Home is. So let's pause in the story and talk about my role a little bit. I was selling a different but holistic approach, and hence why I caught these teams' eyes and ears. But you know what? A number of the org owners didn't like me, never have liked me, and I've gone at them so hard before Flashpoint, during Flashpoint, and you can best believe I can't wait to see some of these motherfuckers in the industry now I'm not with Flashpoint. It's going to be real fun, boys, because I know all about you. I got even more skeletons now from you, haven't I? So Some of them didn't like me. Like, you know when Nicola Nyholm, Nickin and Lyholm, came out and said that quote where everyone thought he was lying, including all the people in Flashback came to him, he's just lying, Thorin, where he said that an owner told him, Thorin is an unstable and deeply troubled character, but a key to winning over the core and has nominally good ideas. Now, here's the thing. I actually absolutely, even then, believed that someone did say that. And quite frankly, their actions suggest as much, as I'll outline. Now, in terms of my PR approach, basically just taking the Thorin persona in account and using it now for Flashpoint purposes, I never lied about anything at all. I was never unfair to ESL and others. I always talked about what was factually the case and characterized it using my expert opinion. If they did something right, I talked about that. If they did something terribly, I talked about that. Other people can suggest whatever they like. It will always be a way people will go to me to say, I have no integrity and I'm a liar, because those are the two things I inarguably have and can provably, on a near objective level, prove to have that the people claiming I don't cannot. Hence why they have a guilty conscience. Now, the idea that his takes are too controversial to make sense is such a stupid premise when you consider how ideas evolve, how advancement takes place in different fields. It doesn't just go, right, linear progression. 8 goes to a 9, goes to a 10, goes to 11, which infers the 12, which infers the 13. And it was obvious. And from 8, you could see we're eventually going to get to here. And it was a nice steady curve. If you think that, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I suggest you're not on the cutting edge. You have no idea what the cutting edge is about. You're just following in the wake of all the great thinkers. And you pick the thinkers you like. In this case, it's just great players that pick the champion and win on it, as far as I can tell. And you just follow in their wake. And you just basically, like, eat their shit. And you go, I think he had pancakes there. And was that... Is that meatballs? I think so. If he had pancakes and meatballs, that means he likes breakfast. Maybe he's Swedish as well. Like that, you're just trying to figure it out after the fact. Like, you're not even coming up with the fucking ideas. So chill out, mate. This ain't your lane. You don't know what you're talking about this moment right now. Then let's go with this whole angle that is basically, you can see by his examples, how he thinks about it. Cadril's conception of what gives legitimacy to a take is the results in pro play. So, based on those further comments, he basically just goes off anecdotal evidence, which suggests to him whether your take is incorrect or wrong. Now, doesn't just point out, by the way, you said Lee Sin wasn't very good in Season 9 around Worlds, but actually the champion could be used in this way, and he had a lot of strength in this particular sense. It didn't fall off in the way that people might think, and it was actually a lot more effective. He didn't just give the reasons, right? He didn't give analysis. He just implied that because Tian used Lee Sin to win Worlds... Next, you know, LS said Lee Sin's not a good champion. Number two, Tian uses Lee Sin to win Worlds. Number three, ? Number four, case closed. That's Cadril's fucking logic. That's nonsense, mate. There's nothing there. And anyone could make that stupid-ass point. There's no analysis behind it. Don't just point out the fucking, like, the fact that something happened. Why did it happen, Cadril? So now he's not in Fnatic anymore. What could be the issues there? Well, let's get into it, right? Now he's not in Fnatic. We can go deep. I can even reveal some things some of the Fnatic teammates told me. So his attitude was one of the biggest things that held this guy back. We're not starting with skill set. No, he had good skills. Attitude. So he had teammate issues across the board. I've heard of many different players who had their issues, like minorly, or why doesn't he play as champion, or when he does play a champion, he doesn't try. Listen, one of the issues I heard, and you could basically observe it by the way they played and using the whole, like, plus minus for self-made Broxer comparison contrast from the previous season, Season 8, Season 9. This guy seems to expect his teammates, particularly his jungler, to read his mind and know what he wants without having to tell them. Now, listen, there's a degree to which, if you are the absolute best at your role, that can make sense. Like, if you're in the best team with the best talent, you're the best at your role, you can sort of say to the other guy, like Forgiven used to say to his junglers, it's not my job to teach you how to play jungle, mate. You should know how to play jungle. And then, listen, I'll call things from Arlen and the interactions, but you fucking figure it out yourself, mate. Not least because jungle, as Dom always says, it's a role that has to be able to say no. You have to be proactive. Like, this actually reminds me of an interesting interview on this topic by Graham Souness, the great Liverpool player from the 70s and 80s. where when he came into Liverpool, he basically asked like a coach, well, how do you want me to play? And the guy was like, we brought you here in order to play. Like, just fucking do your job. But my point is that somebody who's one of the best players and one of the best teams, one of the best coaches, that guy's not going to teach the fucking ABCs of it. Why Nemesis needed that? I mean, that shows already the flaws. He shouldn't have been in a team like this to begin his career, for my money. I think those top teams, I know that Fnatic does it potentially to save money, they're massively gambling bringing in rookie talent like that. A lot of them don't have the chops to immediately come in and be good in that regard. Humanoid was actually more of a vet in that regard. He already played loads of lands at that point. So, in my opinion, you need to be able, in LEC, where these are young guys, often haven't been coached, haven't been in top teams where you really work together that much, you have to be able to communicate with your teammate what you need. So, if you can do that, and then they give you the pieces and you don't perform, yeah, it's on you at that point in time. But you know, it's also on you that you couldn't communicate to him what you needed, that you had to read your mind. Then there's the whole thing where he's gone on LS's stream many times. And listen, he gives off the vibe. He gives this vibe off way more than LS to me. He gives off the vibe that he knows it all. But then you look in the game and all this smart shit he can't apply. I'm not talking about solo queue. I'm talking about when he plays in the LEC. And I've heard from teammates, he's just too stubborn. He's just a guy where if he has it set in his mind that it's done this way, or that you play this chapter a certain way, doesn't fucking matter what you say to him, doesn't matter what discussions, doesn't matter what the coaches say, he's just going to do that. Even worse, when you ask him to play selfless, like not to get his champion, not to have comfort, not to have protection in his lane, I've heard that he's just really bad at playing in a constructive manner in that regard, that essentially you can make him play the champion or ask him to, and he might feel obliged to you, but then he'll just sort of half-arse it, he'll sort of sabotage you a bit. And he'll also basically, instead of just being like, right, well, how do I get through to my jungler to work in this way, he'll just sort of be like, my jungler doesn't know how to play like that, or that champion, or play around what I'm doing here, so yeah, whatever, just can't work, can't, let's not pick that. This is whack when you want to be in a team that's going to Worlds and hopes to be a contender like G2's team was. The whole point of the best journalists is they don't go forward to the info unless they know it is correct, unless they know that is what is happening. And so even when they're wrong, that's why you won't see them admit it, because they very rarely actually are wrong. Maybe something did change in the deal. Maybe someone did actually come in last second and pounce and keep him with a bigger offer or sign him for a different one. They can say, even if the player comes out, players lie, team lie, they can say to them, no, you're lying, I know this is legit, I verified it with my sources, I use journalistic procedures and protocols, therefore I can stand on this. You'll see these guys don't, they instantly cave because they know they're full of shit. That's the worst thing. It's not that they're harmless and just fools and just using any old info that they can traffic in as little nobodies when they start out. No, they know they don't know what they're talking about, that it's just a rumor from this person to this person to this person, from a manager, from a player, and they're just treating these like they're gold, these sources, they don't have to verified. So I hate this because it's not real journalism. They're not using proper verification methods. That's why they're wrong so often. They don't know what they're talking about. That's the worst part. They don't know. You notice I'll often say, I heard, if it's just something I heard. If I know, then I know. Later on, I've got to bang a story about Wulu and a report he did about someone joining XL, which you'll find out was bollocks. But amazingly, comes true later, but he cannot have known that because it wasn't true when he reported it. And so as a result, he actually accidentally got one right. But that's interesting when you see how he frames wrong and right throughout his history. So let's start out with the first one here. This is from the 14th of November, 2019. So one of the first times he started to pop off. He goes, hello all, I'm getting a lot of followers suddenly. Ooh, okay. So I'm panicking a bit. Just know that on this account, I will share stuff that's pretty trustworthy to me. I won't be like this skeleton guy sharing contradicting rumors left and right. Expect less info, but more solid. Now, this approach, you will see him repeat almost every 6 months to a year, especially at the end of each season. He'll explain about how, like, you know, now he's really taking it more seriously and now he's leveling the standards up and now there won't be any more mistakes and now he's going to be a lot more careful about what info he puts out and how true it is and triple check it and all this stuff, right? Because it's really important. As he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, notice he's obsessed with growth completely, not with getting the story right and always being correct. No. And so he does this repeatedly. By the way, let's just take that bit of this apart. I will share stuff that's pretty trustworthy to me. Don't do that. Only share stuff that's trustworthy. Otherwise, by definition, if it's not trustworthy, not pretty, there's no pretty. It's either trustworthy or it isn't. Do you trust the person? If you do, stand by it. If they're wrong, then you were wrong to trust them and you are no longer a trustworthy person / good judge of character. If it isn't trustworthy in any context, then don't fucking publish it on the internet. Or if you do, don't pretend to be a journalist who isn't wrong or someone where other people can't know, but you can't know how I'm wrong, even though I actually am wrong and I know I am wrong on this job. But since you can't know how, which even though I can't know
what you know. Oh, shit. You'd be get tortured in a fucking actual classmate about epistemology, you know, teleology of the world. Well, you would have no fucking hope whatsoever. That's another thing. He uses words in a way where they can just mean whatever that he feels like they mean. Then, not only is he going to use stuff that's pretty trustworthy, massive red flag alarm bell already, but he won't be like some other guy. What? Some other guy just talking out their ass, putting out stuff that they themselves contradict and have to come out and say it's wrong. You're going to do that loads in the next few years, mate. That's what, check out the running time of this video, guys. That's what he's doing for the rest of the fucking video, out of his own mouth having to say he's wrong.
I don't forget the people that support me. And in the case of this video, that would be Matt Pugnaccio Racula, Jason, Jensen Gore, Nikki, Tosh, Toucan, and you know who I'm always going to give the biggest shout out to, my boy Jerky's Minion. Do you want to ask a question for my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? Maybe you want to find out who the next guest is on one of my interviews that I've already recorded but not yet released. Or maybe you want to take part in one of those fabled long-form discussions where you get to decide the topics. Well, if any of those perks or others tickle your fancy, simply click on the Patreon link in the description box below and put your money where your mouth is and join the Scrilluminati today.